Hello, and welcome to Episode 6, the Thanksgiving edition of Notes from the Aisle Seat, the podcast that covers the arts in Northern Chautauqua County, sponsored by the 1891 Fredonia Opera House. My name is Tom Laughlin, and I'm your host as we bring you news and information about arts events at the Opera House and around the region, as well as interviews with artists and creators across the county. The leaves are past their peak here in Northern Chautauqua County, but if you look closely, you may find one or two trees still displaying some muted color. This can only mean that Thanksgiving is just around the corner, with the winter holidays not far behind. As we begin hunkering down against the cold, it's always good to give thanks for what we have, as hard as that might be to do in these pandemic times. In today's episode, we'll hear from some people who are grateful for what the 1891 Fredonia Opera House has brought to the region. We'll be playing those messages throughout the podcast. We'll also hear from Ms. Marcia Merens, who will talk about the upcoming holiday sales event of the North Shore Arts Alliance, actors Jack Bausch and Michael Morrissey, who will be appearing in the SUNY Fredonia Department of Theater and Dance production of The Normal Heart, and Mr. Kevin Genzikoffer, who will discuss his upcoming production of The Happy Prince and Other Tales, a children's theater piece by Oscar Wilde, of all people, being presented at the Main Street Studios in downtown Fredonia. Since 2009, the North Shore Arts Alliance has sponsored the Arts Trail, which has become one of the most visible signs of the beginning and end of the summer season in Chautauqua County. This year, they are sponsoring a new event, Holidays at the Lodge, which will be held at the Roger Torrey Peterson Institute beginning December 3rd. I spoke to the current Board of Directors President, Ms. Marcia Merens, about this event and the North Shore Arts Alliance. I'm pretty fortunate right now to have with me Ms. Marcia Merens. Marcia is the current president, I believe, of the Board of Directors for the North Shore Arts Alliance. So welcome, Marcia. It's really great to have you and good to see you again.
It's great to be seen, actually, and to be with you today.
Let's start off simply to give our listeners an idea of what the North Shore Arts Alliance is.
I'll give you a broad and short overview. There were a group of artists around 2008 who realized that they wanted to form an organization for the benefit of artists. And so they created a North Shore Arts Alliance, and it is a membership of artists and community members. There are artists who are photographers, painters, jewelry makers, textile art, clay, all kinds of disciplines in the art belong to North Shore Arts Alliance. Membership is open to the public as well. We look for community support, as most arts organizations do, because arts organizations of all kinds are economic drivers for a community. So it benefits a community as well as the artists. We have some signature events, but there are other events that we are involved in, exhibitions and other opportunities for artists to show and tell and sell, I guess, as part of what artists love to do.
Now, I know probably that your signature event, to talk about that for just a second, is the Art Trail. I think you have that twice a year. Is that correct? A lot of people will see the signs, but they may not know what that is.
Exactly. Well, it started off as it was called a studio tour in its infancy. And that was to actually bring people into artist studios so they can not only see their work and sell it, but also talk about their inspiration, their technique. And it happened that many of the artists who had studios also had galleries. Mm-hmm. So when they joined the Art Trail, their galleries became part of the Art Trail as one of the stops along the way. So we have galleries, we have studios, and then in more recent years, we realized that there were artists that weren't represented in galleries, that didn't have studios that were accessible. So they became guests at different locations, and we call those hubs. So now we have groups of artists. I have a group of artists in my driveway in tents on Memorial weekend and Labor Day weekend, which are the two weekends of the year that we have the art trail. We kind of bookend the summer, and we have galleries. So we have galleries, studios, and hubs.
I noticed that I was looking at your website, and I see all kinds of things, but I noticed that you dabble personally in clay, and you have some kind of very interesting little clay objects there, very, very whimsical. What is it about your?
This is a little aside from North Shore Arts Alliance, but I'm always happy, as most artists are, to talk about their work.
Yeah, please do.
I'll give you just a little bit of Nitty Gritty Works, which is my business. And everybody starts clay on a wheel, right? And so you make these round bowls that you give to everybody you know as a house gift, no matter what they look like, because they're wonderful because you made it and you put your hands on something and created this object. And so I learned at Mutzlinger's in downtown Fredonia, and then I started to actually feel like I didn't want to make round things anymore, and I didn't want to be on the wheel. And I started to squish clay and create different forms, looking at, nothing really is original. Like, I make animals for one thing, but what's original is the way I shape him. But of course, the object is there for me to copy, right? You get a picture of a rhino and you interpret it any way you can or want to. And with the footed bowls, I make these whimsical bowls that have personalities. And they came from a very ancient Egyptian bowl, fertility bowl, that had little bare feet and a little terracotta bowl. And it's an iconic symbol of ancient times and fertility rites. And so I take it to a different level. And I think that's true about all artists. There's nothing new about what artists do, but it is unique because it is their interpretation and their ability to craft what they have in their mind. But you have the opportunity coming right up to see some of North Shore Arts Alliance artists in the flesh at Roger Torrey Peterson Institute. They are having holidays at the lodge, and it runs from Saturday, December 4th through Saturday, December 18th. And they have events going on throughout that period. And there'll be 15 of North Shore Arts Alliance artists there with their work. And they love to talk about it and, of course, sell it. And you have an opportunity to buy very unique type gifts for people you really care about, or yourself, actually. And at the institute, they will also have a lot of Christmassy things like hot chocolate and cider and story times and all kinds of things. But we will be there as well.
Is this the first time you're doing that, or have you done this in the past?
No, this is the first time. We have that bookended summer. So we kind of get spring, Memorial Weekend, we get kind of summer and fall. Last year we had kind of a holiday art trail, and there were five locations where people can go. And this year we decided to, instead of having people drive to different locations, we decided to have it in one location. And Roger Torrey Peterson Institute was very generous and was very excited about us coming there. As a venue, they will be hosting us, but all we have to do is smile and talk about our work, and hope we engage enough people so that they have a good time and learn a lot as well.
So that's like what, that's about three weekends in December, right? Starting December 4th. Right.
Every artist who's participating will be there the first weekend, which is December 4th. And it's open from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. And I think they're open during the week, the weeks as well, because the artists won't be there midweek.
Right.
And then the other two Saturdays, I will be there. And I'm not sure all of the other artists will be there. I know a few of them. We have some great artists that will be there, just to plug a few of them.
Oh, yeah. Give me the roster.
This is the roster for the holidays at Roger Torrey Peterson. And that's Rachel Brown. And I will be there. Melissa Myers, who's a wonderful graphic artist and painter, and does unique things on a easel and just has great fun with her work. Nancy Nixon Ensign, who is also the curator for the Octagon Art Gallery, has wonderful paintings, and she's going to be introducing these wonderfully painted pillows. So you can have like art on your couch instead of on your wall, and they'll be hand painted and they're going to be gorgeous. Paul Schoenhart, Susan Gutierrez is a painter as well. She lives in Jamestown and tends to paint scenic, identifiable places in Chautauqua County. Mm-hmm. So her work is very local and quite well done. Denise Williams runs the Living Glass Gallery. Her art form is a glass, and her work is spectacular. Jen Kilburn, Terry Lair, Wendy Bale does wonderful, I don't even know what it's called when you cut objects out of paper very finely. It has a name which I can't grasp right now, but it is amazing what she does with a scissor and paper. Amazing. Mm. Sarah Baker Mahalik is a well-known artist, and she does a lot of mixed media work on canvases as well. Matt McNaughton is the other guy that does footed bowls. They're very different from mine. But they're kind of whimsical in their own way. Susan McKay is a local artist. If you live in the North County, you would recognize her name as somebody who is, her paintings are like photographs. That's how detailed and accurate they are. And they just take your breath away. They really do. And Patrick Stokes is also one of the artists that will be at the Roger Torrey Peterson Institute, which is right outside of Jamestown. It's right before you get to Jamestown. It's 311 Curtis Street, and you can Google that and find your way there without much effort if there's no snowstorm between Fredonia and Jamestown. Otherwise, you will have a bit of effort.
I have to ask this question so the audience does know, are there any COVID protocols they should be worried about if they go to the Roger Torrey Peterson Institute?
I would assume that as most public places now, masks are required if you're not vaccinated, and they're highly recommended at any rate.
It is. And I know that I asked that question because, you know, the events at the Rockefeller Art Center, at the 1891 Fredonia House, you know, they were all required to wear masks inside and so on and so forth. So I just want to make sure that the audience knows that.
Well, they may be, as I said, if it's not required, then it's highly recommended. They may have that requirement on their front door. So be prepared. I will say that there's no admission to the holiday show, or actually the art trail either. I mean, it's free to the public, and we try to get publicity out to government agencies and schools and everywhere we can, so that people of in our wonderful community here are comfortable coming. There's no fee and no dress code, but no age limit. You know, it's just really exciting. Children actually enjoy it. believe it or not, because they are so curious. They have more of a curiosity about adults, and they ask questions that adults do not ask. And I always find when children come into my studio, it's actually a little more exciting for me as well to talk to them, because they are so impressed with everything.
Marcia, thank you for coming on. I do appreciate the time that you took, and it was really fun having you. And hopefully we'll get some more people to come down and see. I'm sure there are many things that you have down there that will serve as wonderful holiday presents and so on and so forth. So
it's been delightful, Tom. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Marcia. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
My thanks to Marcia for the time she took to speak with me. Holidays at the Lodge will feature area artists on December 4th, 11th, and 18th from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., and all artists will be present on Saturday, December 4th. Items for sale will be available throughout the week, but if you'd like to meet some of the artists to talk with them about their work, make sure you get down there on one of the three Saturdays in December.
Plenty to be thankful for. I haven't got great big.
This is Rick Davis, and as the executive director of the Opera House, I am thankful not only because it has provided me with a job that I love and that I'm happy to go to every day, but also because it has introduced me to such an incredible group of people. The board members, the rest of the staff, our patrons. And out of that, I have truly developed over the past 15 years some deep and lasting relationships and friendships. And for that, I am especially grateful.
Hi, this is Joyce Haynes with special memories of the wonderful Fredonia Opera House, which begin from attending Winter Garden movies to acting in and directing plays, bringing in bus groups, ushering, and continuing support as a member of a great local theater.
Hello, this is Wave Berry calling from Florida. As an usher, I just want to say how much it has meant to me to have the Opera House there for these years that I've been. To greet the smiling faces and to see the people come in and help them if we can. But also, the Usher Corps, friends that I've made there in our group, and also the way Marcia and Rick and Dan and all the board and everyone runs the Opera House, that we have such high quality in all our programs and the variety that we have, and what an education. It's one of the best things that the area could provide. And I'm thankful to have been a small part of it. So I want to thank them and have a grateful heart. Happy Thanksgiving. Bye.
Pat Carell. I am thankful for the National Theater live presentations. To be able to see a Broadway or London show right here in Fredonia is just fabulous. Thank you.
Hi, this is Jack Croxton. I'm thankful about the Opera House and how it brings us all together and provides a sense of community and just sometimes a chance to meet up with old friends. My memory is once being typecast as a professor in Anne of Green Gables. I hoped it would lead to something on Broadway, but I never got a call. And I do hope someday to be able to join Tom in a podcast. Perhaps we could sit down and talk about the 1960 World Series. Bye-bye.
Here are some reminders of other arts events coming up in the region in the next 2 weeks. The 1891 Fredonia Opera House will be presenting a Live at the Met presentation of Eurydice. This is the New York premiere of this opera, a collaboration by two MacArthur Genius Award winners, composer Matthew O'Coyne and librettist playwright Sarah Rule. It is a retelling of the Greek myth of Orpheus and Eurydice, but told from the point of view of Eurydice rather than Orpheus. Writing for the New York Times on the world premiere of Eurydice at the Los Angeles Opera, retiring classical music critic Anthony Tomasini called Mr. O'Coyne an extravagantly gifted composer, with music that at times turns jagged and dangerous. This Live at the Met presentation will be on Saturday, December 4th at 1 p.m. The Danza Performing Arts Academy will present a dance concert entitled Believe on Thursday and Friday, December 2nd and 3rd at 7 p.m. at the Opera House. Festivals Fredonia will be having their Miracle on Main Street on Saturday, December 4th, with several vendors and events at locations across downtown Fredonia. More information is available at festivalsfredoniany.org. The SUNY Fredonia School of Music will be presenting the Ecstasis Duo's performance of From the Shadows on Friday, December 3rd at 8 p.m. in the Rausch Recital Hall, followed by the Holiday Choral Concert featuring the Chamber Choir, College Choir, and the Fredonia Camerata on Saturday, December 4th at 8 p.m. in King Concert Hall. Both events are free and open to the public. A reminder that masks are required at all events on the SUNY Fredonia campus and the 1891 Fredonia Opera House. For more information, you can call the 1891 Fredonia House box office at 716-679-1891 or the SUNY Fredonia box office at 716-673-3501. The Normal Heart by Larry Kramer was one of those groundbreaking events in the theater that comes along once in a generation. Writing for the New York Times in April 1985, theater critic Frank Rich noted that the play starts off angry, soon gets furious, and then skyrockets into sheer rage. The challenges for the actors involved in any production of this play are numerous. I spoke with Mr. Jack Bausch, who plays the Larry Kramer character, Ned Weeks, and Mr. Michael Morrissey, who plays his lover, Felix Turner, in the upcoming production of The Normal Heart by the Department of Theater and Dance at SUNY Fredonia. Well, I'm pleased to be joined by two of the actors who are playing the lead roles in The Normal Heart coming up at SUNY Fredonia Department of Theater and Dance. I have with me Mr. Michael Morrissey. He is a senior BFA acting major, and also Mr. Jack Bausch. He is a senior musical theater major, and I do welcome them both. Michael, say hello so we can hear your voice.
Hello. I'm happy to be here.
Great. Wonderful. And Jack, how about you?
Hi. Thanks for having us.
Okay. You're welcome. Let's talk a little bit about the play and your characters. The Normal Heart is a play that was written in the early 80s by Larry Kramer, and who died about 18 months ago. And he was a noted AIDS activist, although the word AIDS is, I believe, never used in the play. It's a mysterious disease of some sort. Let's talk about your characters. And Jack, let's start with you. You're playing Ned Weeks, who is the Larry Kramer character, I understand.
Yes, that's correct. He is the protagonist, in quotes, of the story. And the plot revolves a lot around him and his journey, which Larry wrote, of course, intentionally, given his significant life that he devoted to fighting AIDS and the AIDS epidemic that took place in the 80s and 90s in New York. And then he fought, of course, later into his life until he died in 2020. The character is really challenging with so many different elements, but Larry wrote this play as an activist and as an angry man. He did not necessarily write this play as a playwright. And so one of the biggest challenges with Ned is that you are not only trying to do justice to Larry Kramer's life and his story and all the work that he did for the gay community with the AIDS epidemic, but also you have to make some text come alive that is sometimes repetitive, sometimes not as traditional to the stage that you may see with, other playwrights or more contemporary playwrights who write more modern text that is more transcribable to the way that we currently speak. So it's really fascinating. It's a great challenge, but it's certainly a difficult role and something that I've been looking forward to potentially doing and being able to share. And that is also a really wonderful role because as a queer man, you get the opportunity to educate yourself on what it was like for people during that time who had to endure the absolute terror of not knowing why so many people were dying. And that was the reality Larry Kramer was living in. And that is where his anger and frustration really stemmed from. So a lot of the work that goes into Ned and the story that Ned brings is centered really around that.
I'm curious to know from you, Jack, how are you finding the balance between trying to make sure that Ned is, you know, you get the essence of that anger, but at the same time, we find, you know, the heart of the character because, it, you know, Larry Kramer was described as a very lovable man, people who really knew him deeply. How do you find that balance so that the audience can sense the anger of the character, but at the same time, not be completely turned off by the harangues in the play?
Well, I think you said it there is the people who knew him deeply did love him, but that number was an extremely small number of people. He was a very closed off man, and he was while he was diligent and friendly, he was also very sporadic, and anything could kind of set him off on a tangent or make him, you know, really dive into the critical failures of government or medicine that was happening in the time. And so the challenge is that the way that I've been really trying to navigate that through rehearsals and text work is finding the balance between, you know, as performers, we know this, the common audience may not, but playing, you know, an emotion or playing anger is never a recipe for success. And specifically when there is so much of that in one show with one character, it really presents a lot of hurdles. And so what I've been trying to do is find levels to that anger, whether it be frustration or resentment or, you know, loathing or whatever it is, to really try and not only differentiate those moods, but also showcase there was not always one way he looked at the world. And he had many different reasons, and Ned as a character, being Larry Kramer's story, has a lot of different reasons for the way that he reacts. And then we have scenes with Felix, Ned's lover, who is Michael's character, and with Dr. Emma Bruckner, who is played by a dear friend of mine. And these scenes are where you see Larry and Ned's empathy and that emotionality and the connection that made him the lovable man to those select few. And I've been fortunate enough to have some people in my life, in my current life as an actor and a human being who knew Larry personally. So I've been able to speak with them in length about their reactions with him and you know, their work with him with ACT UP and with the gay men's health crisis and things like that during the 80s and 90s that they worked so intimately with Larry on. And that has really been immensely fruitful in the ways that I've been able to navigate this character.
That's a remarkable resource. You're a pretty lucky man to have that.
yeah, definitely.
Michael, so let's go to your character, Felix Turner. What is he about and how does he interact with Ned? What do you see as his relationship to Ned and how that balances off the play?
Right. Well, I guess so. Felix starts the play. He's a reporter for the New York Times, and he's writing all. I think there's a lot of frustration in the character at the beginning because he typically writes about all the gay stuff that's happening in the world and stuff for the New York Times. But as the play goes on, Ned and Felix have a past that Felix held on to, I guess, and remembers, but Ned doesn't at first. And I think there's a lot of frustration in that because I think Felix actually genuinely cares about Ned. And as the play goes on, the relationship gets more and more and deeper in love. And then we find out that Felix has this sickness, this illness that's going around that's killing all of these gay individuals. Then we start to see the deterioration of the character. And this whole play is a conversation about this sickness, but we see it in Felix's character. So attacking this role for me was really working on that deterioration and how to represent it and move the audience in that sense and show the audience what these people had to go through, the frustration with having the illness. And what I tried to work on with Jack was these moments that we have that allows the audience to see your character at a different level. These are the parts that make your character likable. So it was a lot of intimacy work with Jack. And luckily me and Jack have been friends for a while and very close. So it was very, very easy to get into that. And there were no hesitation about it. They're beautiful moments too. We worked a lot on it. And those parts needed to be highlighted for the sake of Ned's character.
Yeah, I think absolutely. I think that's the case. It's hard to get away from this question, gentlemen. So I'm going to ask, let's sort of deal with the elephant in the room. We're now in the midst of a COVID-19 pandemic, and we go back to the epidemic of AIDS. How do you see the parallels between the two? What parallels might you see? Let's start with Jack.
I think the biggest parallel is the way that it just affected the world. Epidemics and pandemics like these create dichotomy in every way, politically, societally, in the case of COVID, in some ways, environmentally, and the way that it affects people, staying inside and not doing as much. But the biggest parallel for me is the way that it affects relationships. And COVID, at least for me, I lost a lot of friends. I was forced to give up a lot of friendships and relationships for the sake of safety. And you lose a lot of the connection that you may have originally been able to have with these people on a day-to-day basis, because you would see them all the time. And then you're put into a quarantine lifestyle where you really have to find a bubble of people who you are constantly being safe with.
There are still people who, or at the beginning, there were people that didn't necessarily believe in the illness. They didn't think it was that serious, or they didn't care per se about it. And I think when things like this happen, we have to nip it in the bud and go full force to get to the bottom of it.
Let me ask you again, Michael, and I'll ask the both of you this final question. What, when the audience comes to see this play, they're coming to see a play that's, was written in the early 80s, but it's 2021. What do you hope an audience member will take away from this play when they leave the theater, Michael?
I really hope they take away what, gay individuals had to go through. Not only gay individuals, this epidemic didn't only affect the gay population, but I hope they, just for me doing the show, I got a deeper understanding of what, these past people went through and how that has changed and how far we've come. There's still more to go as a society, but how far we've come from, where we were at in the 80s. And I hope, this story isn't about, fighting for the right to love. Very basic, it's fighting for, our right to live. It's not... this isn't a story of fighting for gay rights. It's a story fighting for the attention to, prolong our lives, as queer and gay individuals.
Jack, what do you think you would like to see audiences take away from a play written in the early 80s for the 2021?
There's not one specific answer to the question. I think everybody will take something different away. And that is what makes The Normal Heart so beautiful and so universal and so important. The play found the success that it found because it was the first play to really bring to light the gay community in a way that was the focus of the plot, in a way that had been unrivaled prior to that in modern theater. And then, of course, after that, you start to see Angels in America, and you see Tony Kushner and Jonathan Larson, and, you know, a lot of other things that come to the forefront. But the first that we see of this is Larry Kramer's The Normal Heart. And the beauty in that is it allows the general focus of the play to be somewhat transcribable to whatever generation you're in, because the theme, in some ways, fortunately, and in a lot of ways, unfortunately, is still relevant. The main theme being queer activism and the lack of recognition from 50% of the United States. And sure, it has gotten easier, but there are still a lot of hurdles and a lot of challenges for the queer community. Not to mention, of course, a trillion of other minority cultures and races and ethnicities and you know, gender and sexualities. There are still a lot of hurdles for that aspect of reality right now. And I hope that the people who come see this play are reminded of that reality that is ever prevalent in the society we live in.
See, that's why Jack should have went first. He talks, he's good. He's good at putting his words down.
You know, for me personally, Larry Kramer is really one of those significant artists who changed the landscape. I think that audiences need to know that. You know, for me, that's the most significant thing about his work, was the pioneering aspect of it. Gentlemen, listen, thank you for your time. I really appreciate it. And you're doing very, very important work on a very, very important play. So I wish you all the best of luck.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
Okay.
I hope you can all come see the show.
Please do.
And I will tell the audience all about, you know, when and where it is and all that kind of stuff. Yes, so that, okay. You guys don't have to, okay?
All right.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
My thanks to these two young actors for discussing the show with me. The Normal Heart, directed by Professor Paul Makovac, will be presented in the Bartlett Theater in the Rockefeller Arts Center at SUNY Fredonia. Performance dates are Thursday through Saturday, December 2nd through the 4th at 7:30 p.m., as well as 2 p.m. matinees on Saturday and Sunday, December 4th and 5th. Ticket information is on the website at www.fredonia.edu/tickets, or you can call the box office at 716-673-3501.
This is Cindy Yoakam. I'm thankful for all those who had the vision and worked so hard to preserve the Opera House so everyone can enjoy a variety of programming presented by a beautiful venue in northern Chautauqua County. It's a treasure.
Hi, this is Karen Davis. I love the Opera House because it makes me feel like I am going to a special place. From the moment I walk in, I feel the connection with all the people, and it makes me feel so comfortable. We are so fortunate to have the Opera House in Fredonia. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone.
Hi, I'm Bob Davis, one of the ushers at the Opera House. I enjoy the Opera House because of the great entertainment and the friendliness of the people there. We are very fortunate to have the Opera House here in Fredonia. Happy Thanksgiving to all.
Well, the thrill is gone. We came to Fredonia in 1974 when my children were 5 and 2. For many years, we went to the movies at the cinema. Movies have come back to the Opera House, but alas, not the bats. I am so thankful for this Opera House in my hometown. Ina and Michael still talk about the good old days, but the thrill is gone.
This is Carmen and Dick Gilman, and we want to say just how pleased we are that the Fredonia Opera House is here and running, and the programs it brings us to Moscow, it brings us to London, and it brings us right down to downtown Fredonia. We love it. thanks for everybody who helped make this possible.
Rosalie Owen, the Opera House offers so many varied programs to enjoy. I get to see people, and when you are retired and out of the mainstream, that is important. Also, I got to support the Opera House programming by purchasing two horses for my great-grandchildren to enjoy. I have made some real nice relationships with the people I work with ushering. It is such a wonderful addition to the culture of our community. Thank you.
I am thankful for the Opera House in Fredonia because it is an asset to our community and is a cornerstone to our community's future. Thank you to our donors and our supporters, and thank you to everyone who supports the 1891 Opera House in Fredonia. Thank you.
The new Main Street Studios, housed in the former Card Seed building on West Main Street in Fredonia, is becoming more and more active as COVID-19 restrictions become slightly more relaxed and more people are vaccinated. In a feature I'm calling A Short Note, Kevin Genzikoffer, one of the busy young artists that make up the core of talent at the Main Street Studios, talks briefly about his children's theater project, The Happy Prince and Other Tales, coming to the studios. Well, I have with me for this first little experiment called A Short Note, I have with me Mr. Kevin Genzikoffer, and Kevin is the creator of a show called The Happy Prince and Other Tales, which will be down at the Main Street Studio on Main Street in Fredonia. Welcome, Kevin.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. Let's start off first. Give me an idea what the story is about. What's the show going to be about?
So it strings together five fairy tales from the late 1800s that were written by Oscar Wilde, who's more known for his playwriting. But he also wrote fairy tales for his children. And I string together five of them. And it's essentially about a child who becomes inhabited by a star heart as a baby, which is functionally his conscience. And then he goes on a wild fairy tale adventure full of your typical fairy tale tropes, and he gets punished or rewarded by his star heart, by the magic of his star heart, based on his actions, whether or not he's kind or greedy or whatnot.
And this is all theater is good for children, but you basically see this as a children's theater production. Is that correct?
Yes, we do. So I think that what's nice about the way that Oscar Wilde wrote these is that they're certainly accessible for children and very fun, but it's also full of his wit. And so we tried to keep as much of that in as possible. The way that this differs from other adaptations you might think of as well is that we try to keep it sounding as much like Oscar Wilde originally intended as possible. So it's highly narrative. But of course, we had to switch around some of the language to just make sure that every word in the show is understandable to any child who would be coming to see it in Fredonia. So it was a really fun project.
Great. And how did you come about this idea? I mean, what inspired this?
So in 2019, I started on a project to put up a show called Story Theater by Paul Sills, which is an adaptation of Grimm's Fairy Tales and Aesop's Fables. We did 7 months of pre-production. We were 1 week out from rehearsals, and COVID hit, we were shut down. So my friend Rylan and I, who had been working on this project with me, we went to our professor, Ted Sharon, who's also a local theater owner. And we asked if, hey, when this thing blows over in a couple weeks, can we can we put up this show? And he was like, yeah, sure. But we told him that it was $100 for rights. He was like, you could write a better show with fairy tales. So then we embarked on that. We spent about 2 months reading public domain fairy tales. We settled on these and adapted them because we really liked the themes involved.
Oh, that's terrific. So who's collaborating with you to put this show up?
So I, as I said, I co-wrote this with Rylan Jenkins Snaith, The executive producer is Ted Sharon, who so kindly let us use his space. It's produced and directed by myself and my amazing co-director, Avery Carlson, stage managed, among other things, like poster design and puppet making by Tina Mistrick, choreography by Christian Mashevich, all original music by Ian Hayes. And we have 7 cast members and a team of wonderful assistant stage managers as well.
And when will audiences be able to see this, to bring their children to see this show?
Audiences should come see this show on Thursday, December 2nd at 7:30, Friday, December 3rd at 7:30, Saturday, December 4th at 7:30. And there's a midnight show on Saturday, December 4th, that we certainly encourage students to come to. That one will probably not have any kids attending, we'll guess. And then we have a Sunday matinee, which I think will be great for kids as well, especially for kids who may have more sensitivities to light or whatever. The windows will be open and it will be lower. It won't have as much stimulating content. Sunday, December 5th at 2 p.m.
Good, good, good. So anything else you'd like to add? Let me know.
I guess the only thing is that we think one thing that's unique about this show is that it also deals with some issues you don't typically see in a children's show, like class struggle. And there's a really cool scene in the middle about that, and that's weaved throughout. So if that's something that interests you in a time like this, please come see the show.
Well, I can't think of, you know, it sounds terrific, really. And I can't think of a better way to introduce children to the wit and wisdom of Oscar Wilde. I mean, that's really a unique idea. So I congratulate you for that. Kevin, thank you very much for your time for this quick note. I appreciate you coming on the show, and I'll get the information out that I need to get out for people. Okay.
Thank you so much, Tom.
Okay. Thank you, Kevin. Bye-bye. My thanks to Kevin for being the first short note guest on the podcast. The Happy Prince and Other Tales will be shown Thursday through Saturday, December 2nd through the 4th at 7:30 p.m., with a special student midnight show on December 4th, and a stimulus-sensitive matinee performance on Sunday, December 5th at 2 p.m.
Hi, I'm Janet Gilman. I'm thankful for the energy and dedication of the Opera House staff and all of the volunteers over the years that first brought this venue back to life and now continue to keep it as a vibrant part of our community, even as we work to bounce back from COVID. We are lucky to have this gem in our village of Fredonia.
Hi, this is Brady Wozzeck. I used to be an usher at the Opera House until I broke my hip. The Opera House means so much to me, I always call it my second home.
This is Sheila Hahn, and I am thankful for the Fredonia Opera House because it is the heartbeat of the village of Fredonia. I will never forget the excitement of the rallies and announcement at the Opera House that Fredonia had been selected for the small business revolution. Most recently, I sat in the audience with a dear friend and wept through the entirety of Dear Evan Hansen. I feel so lucky to have a historic theater where I can watch wonderful movies walking distance from my home.
I have one last thank you memo from someone who didn't make the deadline and so asked me to record it for her. So here goes. It's Marcia in the box office, and I wanted everyone to know I'm thankful that I've been gainfully employed for over 27 years. I'm thankful to have worked with fabulous people, staff, board, and ushers. I'm thankful for all of our wonderful patrons, and I'm thankful to have done it in a community I love. As for myself, I'm grateful as well for all the opportunities the Opera House has given me to expand my theatrical muscles and work on such independent projects as Arts for the Earth, that championship season, and my one-person multimedia show, A Better Band Than Mine. My thanks also to Rick Davis for giving me this opportunity to create this podcast for the Opera House and for the region. I couldn't have asked for a more timely or creatively interesting opportunity. And that's it for this Thanksgiving edition of Notes from the Aisle Seat. My thanks to Marcia Merens, Jack Bausch, Michael Morrissey, and Kevin Genzikoffer for being my guests on this episode. Special thanks to all of you who called in their messages of gratitude for the Opera House. Notes from the Aisle Seat is a production of the 1891 Fredonia Opera House in Fredonia, New York. For more information on any of the Opera House's events, call the box office at 716-679-1891, visit the website at www.fredopera.org, or email at operahouse@fredopera.org. Notes from the Aisle Seat is now available wherever you get your podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher. If you like this podcast, please consider following us by clicking the follow button on our website and spreading the word through your social media feeds. We'll be back in 2 weeks with a winter holiday episode of Notes from the Aisle Seat. I'm Tom Laughlin, and until then, be safe out there and be kind to one another.